So this year, as most of you know, we're studying the Four Noble Truths, and our theme for this month is the Second Noble Truth. Last week, Lauren gave a really wonderful introduction to this topic, and so I'm going to continue to explore it today, maybe talk about some ways that we can work with this truth so we can better understand it and actually see that craving is the origin of suffering and find our way towards abandoning it. So the second noble truth, as I just kind of mentioned there, is the truth of the origin of suffering. And it says that the origin of suffering is craving. And as Lauren mentioned last week, there's three insights that are associated with the second noble truth. The first is that craving is the origin of suffering or dukkha, just seeing that itself. The second is that craving should be abandoned. And the third is that craving has been abandoned. So when we're working with this truth, the first thing we need to do is actually see for ourselves that craving is the origin of suffering. And so doing this, it isn't a matter of thinking, okay, the teachings say that craving is bad, so I'm going to get rid of my craving. Or thinking, oh, I'll stay away from anything that's too pleasant, so I don't maybe feel craving. I'm going to just get rid of all this. You can try that, but I have a feeling that it is not going to work out so well. At least it sure never has worked out that well for me. So it's not about following some rule about craving. It's more about really understanding how getting caught up in our cravings hurts us and recognizing that it really makes sense to abandon them for our own good and for the good of others too, because when we're caught up in craving, we can cause a lot of pain for other people too. Now, of course, this isn't always the easiest thing to do. With the first noble truth, the truth of dukkha, you know, this is something that we really kind of know is true, that there is suffering, but we'd really rather not admit it, or we'd rather not think about it. We want to kind of be like, oh, okay, well, yeah, but I don't want to deal with it right now. But the second noble truth, that the origin of suffering is craving, really, this might not even sound true to us at all. Our natural tendency is to think that the origin of our suffering is that we can't get what we want, right? That's why we're suffering. So this idea that the wanting itself is the problem, that can be pretty hard, you know, to wrap our heads around. And it might be a good time to mention right now that this craving isn't only about wanting pleasant experiences. That's a big part of it, but it isn't the only thing. Last week, Lauren talked about three kinds of craving: craving for sense pleasures, for becoming, and for not becoming. So in addition to seeing the pain of wanting when it comes to material things, we also need to see the pain of wanting when it comes to becoming. So this is the case when this wanting moves from a desire for some object to wanting to become the person who has this thing or who can do this thing. You know, it's like, for example, the progression from I want my mind to be calm now to I want to be a skilled meditator who's able to always have a calm mind. So it's like identifying with these wants and wanting to become this person that embodies all of this stuff that we think is so good. Or maybe the opposite, wanting to get rid of all the stuff that we don't want. We build an identity around these things that we want and don't want. And this craving for becoming is a really huge aspect of dukkha. I mean, we know that when we think about how painful it is to get caught up in our self-image, you know, all of our attachment to that, our desire to be a certain kind of person, to get rid of the parts of ourselves we don't like and that don't fit with who we think we should be. All of that self-judgment and self-hate, really painful, a huge source of dukkha. And this subject really deserves a whole talk in itself, and I'm not going to do that, but I wanted to mention it just so you can keep it in mind when you're thinking about craving, and remember that this is also a part of craving. So, we're so used to thinking that the way to a good life is to pursue our dreams and fulfill our desires and become the success that we want to be, that it's kind of hard to imagine any other way. And we aren't even sure who we would be without all these wants and desires, which maybe is one reason why we're anxious to hold on to them, you know. But it might be worth it to consider, you know, just ask yourself, how would it feel if I wasn't always so caught up in trying to make progress or worrying about what I don't have that I think that I should have, or blaming myself or others for the situation in life that is my situation now and that I feel isn't good enough? If I weren't doing these things, would I be suffering less? Would I be happier? It's really a good question to consider. So as we investigate the second noble truth, we need to continue doing some of what we were doing before with the first noble truth, which is paying attention to our suffering. And by doing that, see, you know, whether craving actually leads to suffering. And it can take quite a bit of mindfulness to do this. When we're caught up in wanting something, we're usually so focused on the object of our wanting, this thing that we're wanting, and our dreams about how great it will be when we get it, and our plans on how we're going to get it, that all that we really feel is the pleasure of these fantasies. And we forget that they're only fantasies. You know, really, we don't know what it will be like when we get this thing. We don't really know whether it will be as great as we would like to imagine it would be. And also, when we're lost in these fantasies, we really don't notice the feeling of wanting itself. But if we move back from all that dreaming and planning to feel the actual experience of wanting, we may find that it isn't so pleasant. Doing this is not that easy, and I know that when I was first told to do this by my teachers, I didn't even really quite know what they were talking about. But finally, I kind of got it, and hopefully you will too, and see just what does it feel like to want something. And you may notice that when we're wanting, we're not quite content. We're a little bit restless. We're a little bit dissatisfied. We're a little bit unsettled. And these feelings can be pretty subtle, but not really all that pleasant. And then, you know, of course, we all know that wanting is really painful when we're in one of those situations where we can't get what we want. We don't really have a hope of figuring out how to get it, but we're stuck with the wanting all the same, and we're just sitting there with a longing that just isn't going to be fulfilled. That really hurts. And, you know, in fact, one of the things that I have noticed is that sometimes we go out and try to get this object of our wanting, not even so much because that object is so great, but just to get some relief from that unsettledness of wanting. And I have an example that I've been going through recently that will give you the idea of this. I saw this blouse online, and it's a really pretty blouse. although it was kind of expensive, kind of more than I really wanted to pay for it. And two, you know, I need a new blouse like I need a hole in the head. I'm trying to get rid of clothes that I don't really wear. But still, you know, it was a really pretty blouse. And I would think, oh, yeah, it's really pretty. I could wear it with this. I could wear it with that. But I don't really need it. And it might be not as nice as it looks here on this picture. So I kept going back and forth. You know, I want it, but I don't really need it. Should I get it? Should I not get it? If I don't get it, am I going to regret it? And then I noticed myself having this thought of, oh, just get the thing and be done with it. And just to be out of this unsettled place of wanting. And, you know, it wasn't really, it was just kind of crazy, you know, really. And if it wasn't the blouse, it might be, you know, that candy bar in the cupboard that I don't really need to eat and probably shouldn't eat, but I can't quite stop thinking about it, you know. So you see how crazy this can get when it isn't even the object itself that's really the biggest thing. It's just to get rid of this unsettledness and discomfort around this wanting. So that's one way to understand the second noble truth, really paying attention to our wanting so we see this discomfort that it brings. And when we see this, that gives us some motivation to abandon it. Another thing that's helpful is to recognize that getting caught in these cycles of wanting isn't only painful, but really doesn't even make sense. If we have some understanding of the first noble truth, we know that our lives are never going to be perfect. So thinking if we could just get X, Y, or Z, or we could just get rid of X, Y, or Z, everything would be perfect. Now, of course, you know, getting rid of X or Y might actually improve our lives. And it's not that we should never do these kind of things, you know, getting something or getting rid of something. But make everything perfect forever? No. There's always going to be challenges. That's part of life. And we can also understand impermanence and recognize that this thing that we're so anxious to have is itself impermanent. It's going to end. It's going to change. Our relationship with it is going to change. So it doesn't make sense to expect it to bring happiness forever or to have that kind of urgency around it that goes with the sort of unacknowledged expectation that it's going to bring this lasting happiness. And the same is true for that perfect me we're so anxious to become. That isn't static either. We wouldn't be able to hang on to that perfection. Even if we could achieve it, which, you know, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. At least I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen for me. And then, too, as I mentioned earlier, we should recognize that this wonderful future we dream about, if only, if only, if only, it really is just a dream and not the reality. And we don't really know what it would be like if we did have such and such of a thing, or if we did become such and such of a thing. And then there's something that Ajahn Sumedho stresses in his book on the Four Noble Truths when he talks about the second noble truth. And Lauren alluded to this too last week. He says that desire itself isn't such a big problem, that desires and preferences are always going to be there and arise in our mind. But these really are just temporary mind states. And if we just let them be, they'll go away by themselves. It's that grasping and clinging and building a whole self around our desires so we feel like we can't live without them that really creates so much suffering. So if we can just be with our wants and our aversions without trying to do anything with them long enough to see that they are impermanent, that can really be a big help to us because we won't be so troubled with them. We know that they're not going to last forever, and then we can act on them or not act on them out of wisdom, not out of this compulsion of feeling, oh, I gotta have this, I gotta have this. More of, would this really be useful or not? And then finally, there's this third part. In those moments when craving is abandoned, even if only for a moment, for a short time, with one small thing, we need to recognize that it has been abandoned and really feel the relief of not being so caught up in our compulsions. And I think it's really important to notice that and to pay attention to the times when we're not wanting and we're just okay with the way things are. And to actually see that there are times when we don't feel this urgency about getting those things that were once so important to us. It's really a big thing, you know. It solidifies our faith in our practice, and it shows us that we really can find some relief. Even if it's temporary, it's still possible. And it also helps a lot to cultivate equanimity in our meditation practice. You know, do what we can to bring our minds to that state and to recognize it so we know what it feels like when the mind isn't so reactive and it's just being with what is, those times when mindfulness is strong. And if we can recognize it and feel it in our meditation practice on the cushion, then we can recognize it and feel it in our daily lives too. So we know that this mind state is possible. We may not be there all the time. We may not be there as much as we would like. But there are times when we really are there. And maybe we'll start to think, you know, isn't this a lot better than being caught up in all of that wanting? And we can also cultivate appreciation for the good things we already have in life. And this can give us some sense of sufficiency. You know, maybe we don't really need those things that we think we have to have. They're wants, but they're not so necessary. Maybe we have enough already. So if we cultivate these mind states of equanimity, of appreciation for the good things we do have and gratitude for those things, it makes it easier to abandon craving because we see that sometimes, you know, we don't really have to have those things that we think that we have to have. So these are some thoughts about how we can understand the second noble truth and abandon that craving that leads to so much suffering. And I think something too that's important for us to always keep in mind that it's really our own experience and our own wisdom that makes this abandoning possible. And this means that none of this happens overnight. It really is a gradual process as we understand more and more. And I think it's not so much that we get rid of these cravings. It's more like these cravings kind of fall away or lessen little by little as our understanding deepens. And at least for myself, I feel like after all these years of practice that I've done, I still have plenty of wants and desires. And sometimes it seems like I just abandon one to be caught up in another one. And yet, even though it's still an ongoing process, I do find that I'm not caught up for quite as long. I'm not quite as compulsive as I was. I'm not caught up quite as deeply. And there are more times than there used to be when I'm just content with my life and I'm not needing any particular thing. And when the wanting something is more like, oh, It would be nice if instead of, oh, I've gotta have this. So it works. The process, it's a slow process, but I feel like it's one that really works and it makes a difference and it really does lead to less suffering, more contentment, and more happiness. So it takes patience. We need to be patient with ourselves in this process. And it takes faith too. And it, you know, it may take, you know, abandoning over and over and over again. But we can find some freedom, even if it's just for a little while. And then a little while more and a little while more. Like all of the Four Noble Truths, it's really the exploration of a lifetime. So those are some thoughts about the Second Noble Truth. And I hope they will be helpful for you in your work with this truth during this month. So now we have some time for a discussion in small groups. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the big room. It's kind of fun to see you all, broom, fly back up. So now we have some time to share with each other anything that you might like to share about your thoughts about this noble truth or your discussion group or whatever. And already we have two hands. Let's see. Suze is first in my row, so I'll have her first and then Judith.
My group was fabulous. Bows to them. It's just people are doing the work, doing the path. It's so great. And I brought up the aspect of the desire to belong, to become, has so much to do for me with a sense of belonging and being seen and validated. And I told them about this quote that I have from Maya Angelou, which came from an interview that she did with Bill Moyers years ago. And she said, "We confuse belonging with fitting in, but the truth is that belonging is just in our heart. And when we belong to ourselves and believe in ourselves above all else, we belong everywhere and nowhere." And I just love that. And I think, instead of belonging needing to be an external thing that happens out in the world, that the world validates that I belong. It's your sufficiency stuff you were talking about, Lyndall. There's also a sufficiency of me, even though, you know, I know you were not focusing so much on the me, but I think it's important to know that we belong, you know, that we are here and it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a really, really wonderful, wonderful sentiments. So thank you, Suze, for sharing that. That was great. Yeah. And Judith?
Yeah. Okay. My group was also wonderful. But what I wanted to mention was something that you said in the meditation that was very freeing for me. This was one of those mornings when actually nothing was wrong. Everything was just fine. And so I'm meditating and my mind starts going out looking for things to fix. Like, oh, I could find a craving there and I can find an aversion there and I should work on this. And then right at that moment you said, talked about actually being with and appreciating the times when we're not craving. I thought, oh my God. I don't have to constantly be fixing myself. I could actually just relax for a while. You know, there's this old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think that's going to be my mantra from now on. Yesterday I went to Sean and and Marilyn's retreat, and we were talking about, you know, Philip Moffitt's judging, comparing, and fixing mind. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I think I want to focus on the fixing mind, because I'm not so much trying to fix other people anymore. I know that's useless, but me, I'm always trying to fix me. And there are times when I don't have to fix me. And so anyway, thank you for that. That was really timely.
Well, thank you. I'm glad it was really timely. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we don't always notice those times. It's kind of subtle, and we're so busy looking for what's wrong that we don't notice those times when we're really okay. You know, Philip Moffitt's advice about renouncing the judging and the fixing and the comparing is really, really a good practice, I think. And we'd all do well to do that, except, you know, there's times when it's necessary, but it is, there's many times when we do it even though it's not necessary. So thank you. That's good. Anyone else that would like to share anything? Oh, Carol, hi. Oh, you're muted.
There. Oh, hi. Right. Well, we had a lovely discussion as well. And one of the things that came up is we were wondering what happened with your decision about the blouse. But then you could use that wondering as sort of a craving. We were craving to know, but did it really make any difference?
Well, I haven't bought it, but it still keeps coming up in my mind. So it's an ongoing process. I have a feeling that I'm just not going to bother with it because it's nice, but it's too expensive, and I could find another one kind of just as good, but yeah, it's an ongoing thing. Thank you for asking. It's almost kind of funny, but it just sort of shows how niggling it can be and irritating. Let's see, Julie.
That just reminded me, Lyndall, I wanted to say, really appreciated your talk. I also wanted to say for the record, we also had a really great group. So lots of really great group discussions, I guess. But yeah, the thing that really resonated with me was when you said, you know, sometimes I think we just do it just to make that feeling of craving go away, just to get rid of it, because it's so unpleasant. So thanks for that.
Yeah, that's something that it took a while, but I really noticed that, and it's so goofy. It really is. Thank you. Susan?
Oh, hi, everybody. Yes, we had a great discussion, too, and I wanted to share something with all of you that came up in our group. It was a really good reminder for me somebody talked about unhappiness, how unhappiness, aversion, not liking is a common, you know, to want to change it, to want to crave, fix it. And this whole thing gets started often from unhappiness, not feeling good, aversion. For me, it does too. And I know my antidote is, I have a lot of contentment now. Mm-hmm. I cultivate that. Actually, I practice that like the Buddha recommends. And that actually is quite helpful to keep a base, kind of a saturating this, you know, like you're mentioning, noticing when those well-being, contentment, peace through that's there that we can actually create, you know. And so I feel that's quite a good antidote for that, but it's always good to remember because they find little cracks to get in, you know, those all those hindrances, find a new way to get in. And, you know, you think you got some progress, and then they find little ways, entrances back in wherever they can, you know, the law. So, anyway, always good to, that's a really good reminder for me. Thank you so much for that, to the unhappiness, it feeling, just feeding any of that really is quite a hindrance for me. That is kind of the, in a way it is an enemy, but not to cultivate ever, you know. Anyway, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I agree with you that, you know, cultivating appreciation and contentment, I mean, it really does, it really is important, I think, you know, taking the time to appreciate what we have really is important, and it really helps me to not let those wants or those think sources of unhappiness feel so urgent and so earth-shaking. They might still be there, but it's not a life and death matter. So thank you very much. And Candace.
I just, that really reminded me, what Susan said reminded me of something that I mentioned in our group that Suze made me aware of a while back, talking about one of the dukkha things we do is all the little tasks that we do every day, you know, the laundry, the dishes, the how we can complain about them in our head. Oh, I have to do this every day. When really it's just part of our life of taking care of ourselves. And there's something rather sweet about them. And ever since then, I've been noticing when I start that, I turn it around and I think about who I'm doing it for, if it's for me or the cat or my husband or the garden, and love comes into it. And it's just really different then. It's, you know, it's still doing the laundry and it's still cleaning, you know, the floor and all of that. But it's just, there's a reason I'm doing it, you know, and it's love. It's loving, it's caring. So that's a real interesting, I thank you, Suze, for just bringing that up one day, because I thought that's dukkha too. And it's, I can stop that. I can just think about how that isn't dukkha.
Wow, that's lovely. Thank you so much. You know, making that connection to love is what motivates us to do these things. And that's really wonderful. Beautiful. What a really gorgeous way to end this discussion on, because I know it's getting that time for announcements. So thank you very much, Candace. And maybe we can all kind of take that thought with us as we go, that all these little things we have to do that we complain about, remember why we're doing them. It's out of caring for ourselves and for others. So thanks, everybody, for all your wonderful comments. And thank you. Thank you, Gisella, for your comments to buy the blouse for a friend. That's a good thought. Thank you. So I don't take too much time. I will go ahead with announcements now.